On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Now, Angela Merkel has been Chancellor of Germany for 16 years, but her period running the German government is going to end, if not immediately after next week's election, then not too long afterwards. It is an election which Germany really stands at a crossroads. Delighted to say that Derek Scally, who's the Berlin correspondent with the Irish Times, is on the line now. Derek, good afternoon. Thanks very much for taking our call this lunchtime. One would expect after 16 years of having the same person in the Chancellery that Germany would be maybe looking for some change. But I suppose there's debates around exactly how much change Germany is actually looking for.
No, that's the issue with this election. Merkel, good afternoon to you, Gavin. Merkel has been such a successful engineer of power. I mean, she's a physicist by training, and she's really reverse engineered what Germans want and sort of has successfully given it back to them over four electoral terms. And there's many people out there who would be quite happy to vote for a fifth term. So the whoever succeeds her in the Chancellery is really, everyone's just trying to work out in the political parties here, how much change do people want? How much change can we encourage them to believe in, and how much consistency and continuity? So it's change and continuity, and trying to get that cocktail right seems to be the story of this election.
So for outsiders looking in, then, how has it come about that the new person who's leading Angela Merkel's party, the CDU, Armin Laschet, how has it come to be that he isn't seen as the most, the candidate who best represents continuity? Presumably when he's the leader of the same political party, most people would presume he would have been the front runner.
Well, it was exactly presuming that he should be and could be the front runner, as centre-right parties often feel that they are entitled to power. And I think voters have sort of looked and said, you know, that's arrogant. And there was back when he was, he's only really been head of the party since January. So imagine you're given the head of the largest, most powerful political party in Europe in January. In April, you're given the nomination to run for as lead candidate, so as the chancellor presumptive. So January, April, and now we're in September. So to get hold of your party and to mastermind an election campaign in 9 months is really asking an awful lot. The issue is that basically the CDU has been leaning back since Angela Merkel was in the driving seat. She was leader of the party since 2000, and the CDU really didn't have to do anything. They had her. And when she announced in 2018 she was standing down, that was really when the CDU really needed to lift up the lid and say, right, what do we need to do with this engine to keep it running? They didn't. They elected somebody else. She didn't work out. They got Armin Laschet. He's not working out. The CDU really is not really sure who it is anymore, and it didn't have to ask any serious political content questions, because Angela Merkel was just like the Duracell bunny. She just ran and ran.
So right now Germany has a grand coalition with the CDU and the the SDP, is that the name of the main the centre-left party?
The SPD, the Social Democratic Party.
Yeah, so yeah. That's the main kind of centre-left party, and its lead candidate is a guy called Olaf Scholz. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Olaf Scholz is the finance minister in Angela Merkel's coalition. Before that, he was the governing mayor of Hamburg, which is quite a powerful political position. Hamburg, Germany's second city. Before that, he was labor minister in a coalition in Berlin. So he has a mixture of experience in the federal government in Berlin and also out in the States. And he's sort of slotted himself in as the continuity candidate. And yet he's presenting himself also as the candidate of change, which is, considering he's been in government with Merkel and his party's been in government with her for three of the last four terms, it's quite a conjuring trick. He's basically saying, I will offer you continuity, the stability, the sobriety that Angela Merkel's politics offered, particularly in an era of populists and narcissists. I'll offer you that, but I will give you I will give it a slight social democratic twist. So he's talking about respect and social justice. These are terms that have always been strong in German centre left, but have been struggling in the last few years. So he's saying we want to, you know, he's tightening up on things like, you know, tax hikes for top earners, increasing the minimum wage and so on, and so that we're not just clapping for healthcare workers, but we're actually giving them more in their pocket at the end of the month. So this mixture of continuity plus sort of respect for people in the, whatever working life they have seems to be chiming with people. It'll just be interesting if the promise of tax increases for high earners will maybe not scare people off in the voting booth in a week's time.
The relevance of all of this, I suppose, for Irish listeners will be, what would a different chancellor or what would a different German government do differently at an EU level? And we're all familiar with what Angela Merkel has pursued at EU level, sometimes for the better and sometimes for worse, over the last 16 years. If Olaf Scholz was to be the new chancellor, what would it look like in terms of a European approach? Would Germany's stance on Europe be much different?
Well, you have to separate, I think, between particularly as journalists, what we hope would happen and what probably will happen. I think a lot of people are hoping that a Social Democrat chancellor like Olaf Scholz would be able to work closer with Emmanuel Macron. He's been proposing since he became president one idea after another to sort of get the EU back on the road and to drive on integration. And Angela Merkel has always been very cautious, always very slow. She will eventually move in the end, but it's often, some people would say, too little, too late. But she has made some huge leaps. And Olaf Scholz is actually seen by many people in Paris and elsewhere as a slightly more progressive, slightly more a candidate with more momentum. But he's been, as finance minister, he's also he's actually a centrist running with a leftist program. So in power, he'll probably be more of a centrist, particularly if he has coalition partners, including, for instance, the Liberal Free Democrats. They're not so mad about the idea of sort of pan-European debt or, you know, common European dole payments, which are some of the things the centre-left are calling for. So he'll probably be more Merkel than people expect. But from an Irish perspective, I don't think any of the governments that we see coming in will mark any drastic change. I mean, the big bone of contention was always corporate tax, but that's in play at the moment. Olaf Scholz was the man who sort of helped drive on that deal. So really, from an Irish perspective, I think the Irish government can work with any of these governments on offer. I think that's the real story of this election, that Germany, in a time of populism and insecurity and instability elsewhere in Europe, Germany is politically stable. And I think that's really a good news story.
Yeah, I suppose. If Olaf Scholz does become the Chancellor, then if Pascal Donoghue is attending European Council meetings in his capacity as Eurogroup President, then Olaf Scholz is already someone he'll be really familiar with, so there'll be continuity from an Irish perspective. The one party that we haven't mentioned thus far is a party which is also doing very well in some polls, and depending on which polls you look at, they're even possibly in contention to become the most popular party outright, and that's the Greens. And they, you were writing in the Irish Times yesterday, have managed to turn about their reputation where they're no longer seen as merely trying to ban everything.
Yes, I think they've realized that, you know, you can only chastise people so far. At some point, you have to change the narrative and you have to say it into, we can do this. We can make Germany a progressive. Germany's a country that makes things. It's an industrial country. You can't just say, oh, by the way, you're not allowed to pollute anymore. You have to say, well, how are we going to help you become a green industrial economy? Nobody's really managed that yet. And Germans are always good at coming up with systems to make things happen. So if the Germans could actually come up with the systems that would make other economies green by testing it themselves, that would work. So they're trying to show that they're not an anti-business party, they're not an anti-car party, they're just trying to bring people along, and they've just changed their message. It's worked quite well. We'll see, though. The Greens always do well in polls, and on election day they tend to slump back, but it's looking very much like whatever government comes along, and there's quite a few government possibilities. It's never been so unstable or less clear, as the Greens will be in there, and I think that will probably be sort of a progressive climate friendly voice at the heart of the European economic machine.
So if they don't become the most popular party, then they'll be such a dominant size as a secondary party that they'll basically be indispensable from any possible coalition.
Oh, they've already become, you can see from the SPD and from the CDU, everyone has gotten that memo that we need more momentum on climate. The question is just how business friendly does it have to be, and do you go so business friendly that it ends up being diluted down to nothing? So the Greens will be pushing very much for, we have to be results based rather than, you know, how little can we get away with, how, you know, they're not into greenwashing, they're actually looking for structural change.
Is it a fait accompli then at this stage that the SDP are probably likely, given the momentum in polls, to overtake Armin Laschet outright, and that they will become the largest party, or is there any scope for the CDU to hang on to that status, or indeed for the Greens to overtake them?
Well, talking to people who work in the CDU and also in the Axel Springer, which is a very pro-CDU centre-right newspaper group, everyone seems to have given up on Armin Laschet. I would say it's still quite tight. There's still 2 to 3 points between them, but that is the error rate in a lot of polls. So there's a final TV debate tonight. Everyone sort of, the Laschet campaign just has a smell of defeat about it at the moment, and then once you're in sort of a death spiral like that, a lot of voters don't want to be associated with the loser. So we'll see if Scholz can keep building that momentum or if there'll be a little slip in the last few days, but it's certainly an interesting election. We haven't had one like this in, you know, since 2005, so German politics is usually quite nice but dull, stable and so on, but this is a real nail biter.
Well, I was just going to say that, because it kind of has this reputation of being very, you know, nice but dull, that everyone kind of understands the gravity of what the German election has to do and the power that it wields, so that it's not really full of razzmatazz. I was going to ask if a TV debate a week before polling had any risk of changing that, but I guess German voters are now hardwired to look at any kind of razzmatazz or showbiz with a degree of scepticism.
I think so. I mean, it's almost like the opposite. You have to, if you want to reverse engineer a German, you play down the razzmatazz. You don't. You do an anti-clown. You know, the clown thing that Boris Johnson has reverse engineered works well with British voters, but in Germany, you have to be the exact opposite. No, I think from an Irish perspective, from a European perspective, I mean, what happens in Germany will have a knock-on effect across the European Union. So, seeing the debates here, I mean, it's the same debates we're having everywhere. There is no real, you know, European or domestic. It is all one narrative at this stage. We saw that since the euro crisis. So I think following the German debates really gives us a taste of the political debates happening elsewhere. I think in the climate debate, we're just a little bit further on here, but these are debates that everyone is having, and they're going to be big in the European agenda in the years to come, because regardless of what happens, I think a green government or a green tainted government is on the cards in Germany.
For people who were listening at the start of the hour, by the way, when I talked about the Kenya or traffic lights or Jamaica coalition options, those are the colours of the parties that are likely to make it up. So I just to close that off for people who are wondering what I was talking about at the start of the hour when I mentioned all of that. One other question, Derek, before I let you go, which is that there's a separate question on the ballot papers for voters in Berlin next weekend, which is something to do with, if I understand it correctly, it's basically to do with giving the city government the power to buy massive tracts of private land. Tell us more.
Yes, this Berlin is like a lot of countries having, or a lot of cities having a housing crisis at the moment. More people are moving in than apartments are being built. So the market is being squeezed and squeezed. And this is a referendum which would not just ask, would order the state government of Berlin, Berlin is a city state, to expropriate homes from real estate companies with more than 3,000 properties. So your big property funds who operate, there's one called Deutsche Wohnen, and they have, I think it's like 100,000 apartments. And this referendum is saying it's these large corporates that are actually driving the housing crisis. They're just squeezing people for as much money. And they say, you know, this is we want to send a signal that housing is not just something for the monopoly board. Housing isn't just the tin of peas. It's a social good, and we want to scare the government into taking that seriously. The government is saying, look, we can do this. We can use loads of public money to buy back these apartments from these property companies, but we won't have any more apartments. We'd rather build extra. So it's a big debate, and it's really put housing to the top of the agenda. And this you know, people are arguing about the rights and wrongs of expropriation. Can you really force people to sell private property? What precedent does that set? But it really has put housing, it has scared politicians into action. And you can already start to see the government is changing its mind on that and realizing that voters don't get mad, they get even.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting one to watch, given some of the concerns that we have about housing here in Ireland and the role of private builders and all of that. Derek, thank you for your insight. No doubt we'll be talking to you again at some point in the next week or so as we begin to figure out exactly what German voters have said there. That's Derek Scally, the Berlin correspondent for the Irish Times.
On the record
with Gavin Riley
on News Talk.